This passage tonight is interesting in many respects, and we're going to see this. It's a short chapter, but I think it marks a turn in David's life where he is taking more initiative than he did before. As David has been fleeing from Saul, it's been more reactionary. Saul will do something, David reacts to it. Saul gets information that David is a certain place and David has to flee. Well, I think we've noticed this. I've mentioned this even with the situation with Abigail and Nabal and the second time that David met up with Saul, or that Saul came upon pursuing David and David went to meet him to see what he was doing. And remember, he took his spear and his jar of water, his sign of power and his ability to provide. David took those away secretly at night. The next day, reprimanded his general, Saul's general, Abner, for abdicating his duties, and then made it clear to King Saul how close he was to death yet again. And let me ask you this. We've been going through this for a while. This is important. What was David's main concern in all of his wanderings? This is important. You remember what was his main concern? What he missed the most while he was wandering? Worship, and specifically the corporate worship. He could worship God personally. That was still, he's writing psalms, he's praying to God, seeking God, but he missed the corporate worship. And he said, the main reason I want to be done with this and the main loss that I have had is I cannot worship together with God's people. I'm an outcast. They basically said, go worship somebody else's gods. We don't want you anymore. That's how David felt. And Saul, again, realizes how close he was to death and literally just kind of falls apart here. I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do ye harm. Well, we know how good that promise is, don't we? He made that before, and we're going to see that's not the case even in 27. Because my life was precious in your eyes this days, I have acted foolishly and have made a great mistake. Up and down in his emotions, David returns his spear. And Saul then, isn't it interesting in the last verse of chapter 26, verse 25, after David calls upon the Lord to decide between the two of them who is the righteous one. We all know who that is, right? It's not Saul. And David says, Lord, deal with the unrighteous and bless the faithful. Remember and deliver me out of all my tribulation. Isn't it interesting that Saul, remember, has cut himself off from all word of the Lord? He does not have access to God's word. God will not speak to him anymore. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to find out how desperate Saul gets, commits one of the greatest atrocities in the Jewish culture because God will not speak to him. And yet God will still use Saul to speak to David. Interesting. Saul said to David, blessed be you, my son David. You will do many things and will succeed in them. So Saul is cut off from receiving his own personal message from God, but God uses him to prophesy that David will do many things and be successful. Remarkable in that. So David went his way and Saul returned to his place. Now, do you think that David thinks that everything's in the clear and he's okay? No, David's learned quite a bit, right? Since Saul first started pursuing him. And now God has given David the confidence and courage. He's going to take initiative to take control or order his life situation toward more stability. Remember now, he and his men, they have families to take care of. He married Ahinoam. He's married to Abigail now. Pretty soon, if not already, Ahinoam will bear his first child. And his men have families. You can't effectively take care of your family when you're constantly on the run, right? Running from cave to cave, running out in the wilderness. Here comes the maniacal king after you. Just not good stability for a home life. And David is now seeking out a more stable environment for his army. And we're going to see an unusual, but well thought out and effective manner. And yet it's still a little surprising here. And I'm going to be asking you what you think about this very soon and what David decides to do. Well, what does he decide to do? Well, let's see in chapter 27. Then David said in his heart, "Now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand." Now, this stage in David's life, this wandering and all that he has had to go through, is going to come to a climax, a peak, a climax of the story here very soon. And we're actually going to see a contrast in the current king and the future king, and them trusting and rejecting God, and we're going to see who wins out in the end. The future king trusts God. The current king has rejected God's work in his life. Who is going to be the one that God blesses? And that is going to be abundantly clear by the end of 1 Samuel, as we get to the end of 1 Samuel. And we're going to see again here a future king, David, shepherds his people well. David is assessing, how can I best serve God and also take care of my men and their families in the midst of a dangerous situation? Two responsibilities that all of us have: our responsibilities toward man and our responsibilities toward God. And David is assessing, I know I need to serve God still. I know I need to take care of my men and their families. I need to shepherd them. How can I best do that in the midst of a dangerous situation, and also assessing all the resources that God had given me, has given me to this point? He's obviously, when it says he said in his heart, he is taking time to really reflect through this and make a carefully thought out decision. An extreme decision, though. It's going to be advantageous, but it's daring for his army. It's a daring idea here. I should also add that it seems like it was very well thought out. And he's going to continue. So let's look at it again. I shall one day perish by the hand of Saul. So David, first of all, is wise. He's not trusting Saul's promise to leave him alone, because Saul hasn't proven himself trustworthy. So David says, sooner or later, if I continue this course of reacting to Saul's pursuit, it is going to eventually spell disaster for me, for my family, and for my men. We can't keep living like this. Sooner or later, Saul is going to find us. And so I need to assess, is there a better way, a better situation that will help us? And he says, there's nothing better. There's no better way, basically, at this point, than I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Wait a minute. Does that conjure up a question mark in your mind? Hasn't he tried this before and it was a disaster? Well, what's going on now? He's looking to seek help again from the Philistines. Why? To escape the constant pressure that he's under. Saul's constantly seeking after him. And another thing is interesting thing in this narrative as we go, it seems as if God has disappeared from the scene altogether. He's not mentioned at all. So David's planning to go over to the Philistines. God's not mentioned at all. What should we think about this plan of David's? I'm going to throw that out to you. See if you've ever thought through this. And I'm going to take a perspective that you may not agree with. I mean, personally, some of you may not, as far as why things going on here. The applications will be the same, but it's okay to differ on what's going on here. So what do you think? First time David went to the Philistines, that was a disaster. Second time, we'll see. Yeah.
So I see in verse 1, it's not recorded for us whether he did or didn't you know, consult the Lord on this, so I can't be dogmatic. But when I do see something like that, it's a reminder for me. When something comes up in my life, it is good to consult with God, to ask Him. So I would learn even from this, whether David did or didn't, the application for me is certainly to consult God in the midst of things, certainly trust in Him, not saying right or wrong, should I go over to, or at the end, the Philistines,
yeah,
to do this? Like, certainly, God needs to be leading in that way. So it's certainly a reminder for me to trust God. Am I trusting God? Am I following His will? Things of that nature.
Yeah. And Rob's already stepped into one of my final applications, and that's exactly right. Turn this up so you guys on Zoom can interact. So that's good. Regardless of what's going on with David here, it's a good reminder to us, seek God, especially something this important. My two responsibilities, the reasons I'm here on this earth, to serve God, to minister faithfully to Him, to take care of responsibilities with my family, with other people. Certainly, I need to be checking with God and assessing with Him in the picture on those important things. So, very good. All right. Anybody else have a better, a little bit more of an idea whether you think this is a wise choice or unwise? We have the basic principle that Rob spelled out for us regardless, but in David's aspect particularly, is this a good plan?
I don't think so.
You don't think so, Ben? Okay. All right. Well, you either got to fall in one of two camps. It either is or isn't. So Bev's in that one camp. And good people differ on this, so don't feel bad if I differ a little bit as well.
There's an interesting number of personal pronouns in the first verse.
Hmm.
And David said in his heart, I shall now, and then I should speedily, and Saul shall despair of me, and I escape, seek me anymore, and I said, he's having a little bit of eye trouble.
Yeah. That's very good, Kurt. And I read this, and that does concern me. There's a lot of eyes in there. So I do take that into consideration. Even the fact that David said it in his heart, it just seems to be focused on his own opinion. But I'm going to add to that here in a minute.
In every other instance where there's an interaction between a believer and the world, there's always this warning or sense of something's going wrong. Especially when you use a phrase like David said in his heart. Well, there's an absence of God, like you said, and where is he getting the ideas from? In almost every other case where one went willingly to the enemy, it didn't end up well. Even in David's own experience previously, where they had no choice, but in captivity, it's not by their own nation of Israel, but their own doing, but God allowed that to happen. So it worked out because God planned everything for them. None of that is showing here in this narrative.
It's true. And whenever we have a narrative like this where God is not mentioned at all, he's seemingly out of the picture, we have to tread carefully on what we decide. Now, Steffi's going to say something here in just a minute. I will say that my interpretation here is going to be a little bit different from what some of you have mentioned, and I'll give explanation for that. But Steffi, go ahead.
I'm not picking a side. But I've heard it said, sometimes something can seem logical, but it may not be theological. So while it may have been a very logical choice of, he's not going to chase us there, we're staying there, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's God's will.
Yeah, and that's true. And that's true. And that's probably that's what you all are focused on here is something that I do consider carefully. It does concern me certainly don't want to say this ends up being a good plan in a lot of ways. But it's not just because it's a good plan. It worked out. It means it was God's way. We have to differentiate between those two. We may be very intuitive and able to come up with a way forward, but if we haven't submitted it to God, we could still find ourselves in real trouble. And so, yes, Sandy.
So when he went to Gath the first time, how many were with him?
Just himself.
So
he was by himself.
With an army of 600, right?
Yeah.
So strength in numbers.
Yeah, true. That's very practical, but there is strength in numbers. Interesting that Achish is willing to bring him in, and there's reasons for that. Well, let's just ask, let's look at this. Again, what's David's two responsibilities? To specifically now, to obey God in wiping out the enemies from the land. Remember, the prophet Gad came to David earlier on in his wanderings and said, you need to stop hiding out here. God wants you to take care of the Philistines and the enemies because King Saul's not doing his job. And David, you're going to be the future king. So you do the job that Saul's not willing to do. I know Saul's chasing you. I'll protect you. You take care of the enemies. Saul's not doing an effective job at that. That was God's mission to David while he's hiding from Saul. So that's one of David's responsibilities, to continue to deal with the enemies, wipe them out from the land, remove the enemy strongholds in the land. And that was a command of God all the way back when the people first entered the land. If you'll remember, all the way back in Joshua, as he was leading, did a good job of following God's command. And then after he died, the people, not so much. They did a pretty pathetic job of clearing the land. And David, from what we can tell here, knows God's law well, knows God's expectations. And he goes beyond just dealing with the Philistines in this narrative. But now he's first of all, he's dealing with Saul's failings. In this narrative, we're going to see him dealing with the nation's failings and dealing with enemies that the nation should have dealt with. So he has that responsibility. And then the second responsibility, to shepherd his own flock of people that God had given him, people under his care. He had to make sure they were taken care of. Okay? Can he fulfill that responsibility in the current trend of events? Being totally, at the mercy of Saul, running away from a human standpoint, not very effectively. He's really struggling with carrying out those two responsibilities from a practical standpoint very effectively when he's constantly on the run. Okay, second aspect, does David seek God's face in this matter? We don't know. But at this stage in his life, would you not agree with me that he has an established pattern of seeking God? The author has made that clear. And he's also accumulated a multiple godly advisors. Prophet Gad, the priest that ran from Nob, the one, his name escaped my mind. I keep thinking Ahinoam, and that's David's wife. But Abiathar. Yes, thank you, Abiathar. And he has Abigail. He has multiple godly counselors with him. I think there's a good chance here that David, it's not like the author has to tell us every time that David seeks God's face. If there's an established pattern, why not then just expect that David has done that in this situation? We're not told that he didn't, and it's an established pattern. So I think it seems best to accept, based on the details of David's plan, that he did seek counsel from wise people and from God. God's plan and David's plan and God's plan is forwarded in this move, and God doesn't hinder David from doing this. Not that that's always a sign that God approves. But a lot of other times in this narrative, when David has gotten ready to do something foolish, God has said, no, David, don't do it. This time, God doesn't do that. So God gives him success in this, and Saul pursues him no longer. Let's look back at verse 1. What's his purpose? Nothing better for me than I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand. So David arose and went over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. It seems the same king that he had went to before. And this time the king accepts him, interestingly. This madman that he had kicked out before. Well, what's going on with that? Well, David has a track record now. Don't think that the Philistines don't know that David's been on the run and that David has successfully evaded the king. And most likely King Achish says, oh yeah, David, well, he is on the run from the king. He's a renegade. And if he wants to help me, well, why not? He's obviously not loyal to his own people anymore. Sure, David, we'll take your help, because David has a track record and they've seen him and watched him. So most likely Achish is happy about the idea of a renegade, and they know, they probably heard that wonderful song that the ladies probably still singing. Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. And they're like, we get the guy that killed the 10,000 soldiers? Yeah, we'll take him. He's the powerhouse. He's stronger than Saul. Certainly, we'd be glad to have his help. So David lived at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. And David's plan's effective. When it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, he no longer sought him. What does that verse also tell us? That King Saul was still seeking David, right? So much for the promise. David was right. He was wise. God had given him wisdom. And yet when Saul hears that David has crossed over into Philistine territory, Saul says, all right, no, nothing more I can do with him, and pursues him no longer. Saul's pursuit of David stops at that point. Now, is David going to be satisfied living in a pagan city? Verse 5, then David said to Achish, if I have found favor, the King James says grace, in your eyes, let a place be given me in one of the country towns, that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? So that day Achish gave him Ziklag. Therefore Ziklag had belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. And the number of days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. You see, David's not content to stay in the metropolis of Gath. Unlike Lot, who was more than willing to settle there and just enjoy all of the heathen pagan practices, I'm confident that David's there saying, I can't lead a family in this kind of environment. I can't lead men and raise a family in the environment of the heathen Philistines. This isn't going to work. So he's got a plan. Phase 2 of his plan. And on an extremely practical level, David does not want to continually use up the resources of the Philistines in the city. He realizes that he's only going to be a welcome guest for so long. There's so many practical aspects to this chapter. But it reminds me, you know, when somebody does something nice for you, thank them for it, but don't continually depend upon that person as if they're going to be able to continue that over a long period of time. Even when someone invites you over to their home, I know this isn't a direct application, but it comes to my mind, just don't overstay your welcome. Just be wise in your dealings with other people. David's very wise here. And he says, you know, sooner or later, we're not going to be as well-loved in the city if we're using up all their resources. And he goes to the king and says, hey, we don't want to get in your guys' way. Why don't you give us, is there a town that we can live in locally? We can be independent of you all. We can be independent on our own resources. And Achish, of course, would realize the benefits of having David in his country helping him, and I'll say with a caveat, so he thinks. We'll see that in a minute. But at the same time, not accessing important resources of the city. So he gives him this town, the town of Ziklag. And from what we can see, the narrator says it continued to be a city that the kings inhabited, maybe a summer home or whatever, for a long time. It was closer to the coast. Whatever, as the author's writing this, he's saying, this is still a city that the kings take advantage of. So now David is able to live in the land of the Philistines, safe from the pursuit of Saul and away from the scrutiny of the Philistine king. and he's able to fulfill his responsibility of being a good shepherd to his people. So he has a secure place to live, it says here, for over a year. All of these details, to me, says that David thought this out well. He wasn't, remember the first time, it wasn't well thought out at all. He was desperate. He's running to the enemy. He has Goliath's sword. I mean, all the wrong context and he obviously had not sought God's direction at that point. This is an entirely different thing. David knows his reputation with the Philistines. He knows the situation with his own family, his own responsibilities. It seems in my mind that this is a well-thought-out plan that God had led him to. And now he's fulfilled his responsibilities with the people, but now he's also able to fulfill his responsibilities with God and continuing to wipe out the strongholds of the enemy while they're living there in Ziklag. Verse 8, now David and his men went up and made raids against the Geshurites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. For these were the inhabitants of the land from of old, as far as Shur, to the land of Egypt. The fact that these people, these enemies, were of old residents points to the fact that the people of God of old had not dealt with them. And so David now goes beyond just cleaning up and taking on the responsibilities of Saul. He even goes further and is now, if I could put it this way, he is purifying the land, making it more holy in the way that the Israelites, his nation, had refused to do for centuries. David is a man committed to God, and he wants to see God's commands carried out. So David is purifying the land. He's far enough away from Achish, though, that he's able to kind of shield or hide what he's doing. Look at verse 9. And David would strike, or the good old King James word, he smote the land and would neither leave men nor woman alive, but would take away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, the camels, and the garments and come back to Achish. Now, here we have that very awkward, difficult aspect of what this holy war meant, and that when God called his people to wipe out the enemies of the land, he really, in many cases, he directed them to totally wipe out the enemy, men and women, and even children sometimes. It is a horrible reality, but at the same time, it was something that God expected for a specific purpose. He wanted the land holy, removed from pagan people with pagan influences that, let's not kid ourselves here, folks, these pagan people practice great wickedness. They slaughtered their own children many times. They did horrible things. All you have to do even is think about Lot in the city and the angels delivering Lot and his family away from that. And then his daughters were so immersed in the customs and some of the terrible things that they did with Lot. These were people, these pagan peoples were involved in great wickedness, and the land had to be cleansed and these people had to be dealt with. And David was willing to do this because of his love for God and faithfulness to God. But he's careful. He's wise in this. And he takes all of the spoils and he splits it with Achish. And then he also takes some for himself. So he's providing for his people. He's shepherding them. But how does he handle the fact that he's taking these from allies of Achish? Well, he doesn't lie here, let's be clear, but he doesn't tell Achish everything. And because Achish wants to know the details. David, look at all this stuff, all these spoils. How'd you do it? Who'd you kill? And he says, where have you made a raid today? Is really what that Hebrew means there, that phrase. And David would say, against the Negev of Judah, or against the Negev of the Jerahmeelites, or against the Negev of the Kedites. He's saying, oh, we went over to this region over here and dealt with the enemy. My enemy, not yours, but he doesn't tell them that. And then he goes, and we went over to this area and we dealt with the enemy there. He gives them just enough details uphold or to reinforce the confidence and faith of the king without giving him all the details. So he tells partial truths to the heathen king without revealing all their actions. And one more question here as we finish up. This is it dishonest to always hold back the full truth? Here's a moral question here. Sometimes some people may take this particular tact or idea that it's always dishonest to hold back the full truth. I would say not necessarily. It is wrong if you are being dishonest and misrepresenting an act of sin or something that you've done by special. I'll give you a perfect example, something that comes to mind even in families. When parents ask their children, how did such and such happen? And the children let them know how it happened, but kind of leave out the details that they had a part in it. Well, that's being deceptive. That's being dishonest, right? And so that would be wrong. But let's take the other side of this. Let's say a pastor is counseling and it's it needs to be very secretive from the standpoint of the person that's being counseled. He's given certain details that only he's supposed to know. But because of that, because of something that he's done on that counseling situation, he's able to lead the church in a specific way and do something for the church. But he doesn't have to give them all of the details of what has happened in particularly with particular people and counseling them or whatever. They don't have to know every aspect of what someone has relayed to him in order to move forward. I don't know if that makes sense, but you get situations where a pastor has to be careful with the details or personal details about somebody's life, but also they can move forward on something related to the church and the direction of the church without having to let those personal details out. And that's not being deceptive. It's being careful with people's personal information. So all I'm saying is here, I don't think that David in this was being dishonest. I wouldn't say he was lying. He was practically saying what he needed to make this work. Now you may come down a little bit differently on that, and that's fine. But in the end here, David is able to fulfill his responsibilities to man and God and cleanse the land, making it more holy than before, with the removal of pagan people who practice great wickedness, and it provided security for his people by establishing a growing trust with King Achish, who believed that David has now become a full renegade against his own countrymen. Look at the rest of that. Verse 11, and David would leave neither man nor woman alive to bring news to Gath, thinking, lest they should tell about us and say, so David has done. Another practical aspect of him wiping out all the enemy, they can't tell tales. And so nobody knows. Such was his custom all the while he lived in the country of the Philistines. And Achish trusted David, thinking he has made himself an utter stench to his people of Israel. Therefore, he shall always be my servant. He's got Achish's full trust, and yet he's still following after God and cleansing the land, and he's fulfilled his responsibilities. So I come down on this, that David was seeking after God. The details of this plan match somebody who sought God's wisdom. There's much wisdom in this that I think only could have come from God and God's protection. However, as we finish here, I'll say this. God's not going to allow David a full sense of stability and accomplishment. He's going to be tested again here. Look at the beginning of verse 28 or chapter 28. In those days, the Philistines gathered their forces for war to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, understand that you and your men are to go out with me in the army. Achish is thinking, I've got the Superman here. I've got David, and we can defeat Israel now. David, you don't have a choice. You're going with me. And David said to Achish, notice how he puts this, very well, you shall know what your servant can do. Talk about vague there, right? We'll see more about this next week. And Achish said to David, very well, I will make you The King James says, keeper of mine head. That's a great picturesque way of basically describing a bodyguard. I'm going to make you my bodyguard for life. Uh-oh. What's David going to do now? Stay tuned, and we'll see you next week. So a couple applications here, folks. Number one, we have a responsibility to God and to men. And even as Rob mentioned earlier, we need to assess our time and resources to faithfully fulfill both equally and seeking God's direction on how to do that. Regardless of whether David did or not, it's a reminder to us, always seek God's direction. And a responsible servant will access what God has given them and how can they can best use those resources to be most useful. By the way, another ministry question here. Should a man give more time to ministry and just say, God will take care of my family? That used to be a ministry equation not too long ago. Many pastors would say, I'm going to devote most of my time to ministry and God will take care of my family. I think there's a picture here of David where, folks, it's clear both sides have to be represented well. It's not either or. It's not one that's greater than the other. But as a pastor and as ministry leaders, it's both in the same amount. In fact, I would probably go a little bit, maybe just a touch over on family to make sure that I'm taking care of my family ultimately, but also making sure I'm responsible in my ministry with God. David has a good balance here, and we should have a good balance as we go forward. Both are important, equally important. Number two, in a wicked, dangerous world, we must be as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. So we need to contemplate how we can, in good conscience, be faithful to God's commands and still raise our families in a godly and safe environment. As this world continues to get more wicked, folks, we have to pray, Lord, help me to be careful. Help me to protect my family, but help me also to be true to your word. And God's going to have to give us wisdom in that. I think he gave David much wisdom in this and how to do that effectively. We need to ask him on how to do that as our culture encroaches and threatens the way that we even raise our families. We have to be wise. We have to seek God's wisdom in this and he'll give it. And then God will provide ways to be a testimony to our community while still serving him in purity and holiness. I'm convinced he will do that when we seek that. So let's seek his ways tonight. Let's ask him for wisdom and how best to deal with church ministry in a dark and wicked world. And God will give us that way. He will show us the right ways in that too.